Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount House of 12th Hour, in the Oregon, Texas. Today is August the 25th, 2024, or it is 21st day of Elul, 2028. We will start our circus service today, entitled What We May Be If We Work With the Yahweh, and Let Him Work With Us. Okay. This sermon was given on March 18, 1939. My, 85 years ago. Isaiah 62:1. We'll start with, for the Zion's sake. Now, when it says Zion's sake, it's talking about the purified Zion. Now, the Hasbeens was also called Zion for their movement, but they had the fourth movement of the five that was designated for Israel to carry out in this world. And the first movement was with Moses coming out of Egypt 3,500 years ago. The fourth movement was in Matthew 20, verse 5. Those that was called at the ninth hour, which is the Adventist, that's the fourth movement in 1844. There's one more movement left for Israel to carry out, and that's the fifth movement that's mentioned there in Matthew 20, verse 6. Those have fifth group of laborers that's called at the 11th hour. And that's who the house of David that I represent the leadership of today, that took over that movement from Willis W. Johnson when his time was up in 2003 at Kermit, Texas. And so therefore we're in the Mount Zion at the 12th hour that was called to come into being at the end of the 11th parabolic hour. And the end of the 11th parabolic hour was when Willis Johnson finished his ministry by the Passover 2003. Willis Johnson's ministry is officially over, of fulfilling 33 and a half years from 1970 to 2003. Isaiah 62:1. For the Mount Zion's sake of the 12th hour will I not hold my peace, and for the Jerusalem's sake I will not rest until the righteousness thereof go forth as the brightness, and the salvation thereof as a lamp that burneth. For this verse denotes that it will take much speaking and effort on the Yahweh's part before righteousness and salvation will go forth out of Mount Zion. And Jerusalem. Okay. It is because Yahweh's people need a work to be done for them that will cause him to continue speaking and working until righteousness and salvation are accomplished. We may be certain also that in this process we as a body will win, but some as individuals will lose out because they, like the rebellious Israel of the old, will not submit themselves for the necessary requirement that the Yahweh lays before them. For they refuse to exchange their ways for their ways, and their thoughts for his thoughts. For let's do that again. For they refuse to exchange their ways for his ways, that's Yahweh's ways, and there's thoughts for his thoughts. Okay, Isaiah 63, 2. And the Gentiles shall see thy righteousness, and all kings thy glory, and thou shalt be called by a new name, let the mouth of the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, shall name. Because Yahshua is the one speaking here, because he is here on earth a second time, this is his second advent, to join this last Mount Zion, which is at the 12th hour, that we are represented as being the leaders of. For a new name is to be given unto his people as a body, and perhaps even as individuals also, just as it was in the cases of Abraham, Sarah, and Jacob. For after our characters are changed, Yahweh may wish to give us names that would be indicative of that fact, that our present names should not then be fitted. For Yahweh is going to make his people so glorious that kings who now glory in their power will then acknowledge the glory of his people. Consequently, if we are to be among that people, then we are going to be made known in all the world, even unto all kings, at the time when the Yahweh makes his people known, and our names will be clashed forever among the name of the great men of the scriptures. Do you actually realize that? Now here's Vitti Olive talking about the in 1946, I guess, this sermon, as I said, or 1939, as I said, it was 85 years ago, he was saying that recognition belonged to the Shepherd Rock during the 30s, that they would be this great people, clashed with the great men of the earth and king. But the Shepherd Rock never did reach that level of notoriety or anything, because it wasn't time for the Mount Zion at the 10th hour, and that's what the Shepherd's Rod was. They were the Mount Zion of the 10th hour, not even of the 11th hour. Brother Johnson, 1970, had Mount Zion at the 11th hour, and he still had next to the last hour. So, and Brother Johnson didn't reach that notoriety. Matter of fact, he's lost all recognition of being anything that contributed to the growth of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Matter of fact, Brother Johnson represents that last servant that took away from the Adventist Church. And so as we go on, it says in Isaiah 62:3, thou shalt also be a crown of glory in the hand of the Yahweh, the Father, and a royal diadem in the hand of thy king, Yahshua his son. We are also to be a crown of glory in the hands of Yahweh. Isaiah 62:11. Behold, the Yahweh hath proclaimed unto the end of the world, say ye unto the daughter of Zion, behold, thy salvation cometh, behold, his reward is with him, and his work is for him. This glorious announcement is to be made just before we receive our reward. And of what Well, our reward consists, if we are faithful, eternal life, a place in the kingdom of the Yahshua, a complete cleansing of the body, soul, and spirit, thus making us a people without guile, a crown of glory unto the Father Yahweh, and everything else that goes with it. Let us now turn to Joel chapter 2, verse 1. Blow ye the trumpet in Zion, and sound an alarm in my holy mountain, that all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the Yahshua cometh, for it is nigh at hand. Here a command is given unto someone to blow a trumpet and sound an alarm. Why? For the day of the Yahshua cometh, for it is nigh at hand. Okay. Joel 2:2. For a day of the darkness and of the gloominess, a day of the clouds and of the thick darkness, as the morning spread upon the mountain, a great people and a strong, there hath not been, ever the like, neither shall be any more after it, even unto the years of many generations. And this day of the gloominess and thick darkness, there is also to be a great and strong people. It may, if they are to be greater and stronger than any in the past, then they will exceed in strength. Even Samson, what is it that will make that people so strong? The very first requisite is faith. Faith in what? Faith in the present truth of the hour, of their day. Whatever the present truth is being taught for their salvation, then that's what makes them strong. And that's all I'm going to say about that. The second is a courageous action. And I would like to add, though, their very first requisite is faith and the understanding of the new and living way of the Hebrews chapter 10, where it talks about Yahshua through his blood, through the, as it's called, a new and living way. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 19 and 20. That's the plan of salvation, is through the blood of Yahshua here in the new covenant. For we must continue to believe even in the face of the severe circumstances that will present themselves to challenge our faith. We must realize, therefore, that not a little faith, but very much faith is required of any who would be among this great people. Ever remember that the Israelite multitude and later the whole nation completely lost our sample, or simply because of their unbelief, which led to their rebellion against Yahweh's ways until there was no remedy. As an incidental thought, we might mention also that Samson was obedient unto a strict diet and a specific injunction concerning his hair, and his strict adherence to these requirements did prove to be the provision he had to meet in order to possess superior muscular strength. Read that again. As an incidental thought, We might mention also that Samson was obedient unto a strict diet and a specific injunction concerning his hair. And his strict adherence to these requirements did prove to be the provision he had to meet in order to possess superior muscular strength. This example teaches us that if Yahweh requires of us something which he may even require of no other, the purpose in it can be served in no other way than by our strictly adhering to it. If Yahweh, for instance, has given us dietary and other requirements to follow in order to keep us separate from the world, so that he can deliver us from the evils in the world, then we must obey them if we would be delivered. Now let us return our attention unto Joel's prophecy by reading Joel 2:3, a fire devoured before them, and behind them a flame burneth. The land is as the Garden of Eden before them, and behind them a desolate wilderness. Yes, and nothing shall escape them. What will make the land before them as a garden, and behind them as a desolate wilderness? They will leave nothing behind but desolation, for they will gather out all the saints into the kingdom of the Yahweh, which is ahead of them. Let us turn to Isaiah 33:14. For the sinners in Zion are afraid. Fearfulness hath surprised the hypocrite. Who among us shall dwell with the divine fire? Who among us shall dwell with the everlasting burning? Fire is both before and behind, and only those, therefore, who are insulated then with the righteousness of the Yahshua will be able safely to stand between these two fires. Isaiah 33:15-19. He that walketh righteously and speaketh uprightly, he that despises the gain of oppression, that shaketh his hands from the holding of pride, that stoppeth his ears from the hearing of blood, and shutteth his eyes from the seeing evil, he shall dwell on high. His place of the defense shall be with the munitions of the rocks. For the bread shall be given him, his waters shall be sure. For thine eyes shall see the king in his beauty. So the righteous people of the house of Mount Zion, the 12th hour, the house of David, they're going to see Yahshua. They're going to see him in his beauty. They'll be able to look upon him. But all the wicked that are left behind are not going to see the king in his beauty. For they shall behold the land that is very far off. Thine heart shall meditate terror. Where is the scribe? Where is the receiver? Where is he that counted the towers? Thou shalt not see a fierce people, a people of a deeper speech, and thou canst perceive, of a stammering tongue that thou canst not understand. We do not now see the great men joining themselves with the Yahweh's people, and moreover, Yahweh's truth does not come to us in a deeper speech than we can perceive, neither in a tongue which we cannot understand. For the Yahweh's people will be able to understand, and they will also be able to live in the midst of the fire. Besides in this, their bread and their water will be sure. Okay, let us read verses 15 to 19 and include verse 20. Okay, it says Isaiah 33, 15 to 20. He that walketh righteously and speaketh uprightly, he that despises the gain of the oppressions, that shaketh his hands from the holding of the bride, that stoppeth his ears from the hearing of the blood, and shutteth his eyes from the seeing evil, he shall dwell on high. His place of the defense shall be the munition of the rocks. Bread shall be given him, his water shall be sure. Thine eyes shall see the king in his beauty, for they shall behold the land that is very far off. Thine heart shall meditate terror. Where is the scribe? Where is the receiver? Where is he that counted the towers? Thou shalt not see a fierce people, a people of a deeper speech than thou canst perceive, of a stammering tongue that thou canst not understand. Look upon Zion, the city of our solemnities. Thine eyes shall see Jerusalem as a quiet habitation, as a tabernacle that shall not be taken down, not one and not one of the stakes thereof shall ever be removed. Neither shall any of the cords thereof be broken. This is why kings shall at last seek our glory. Joel 2:4. For the appearance of them is as the appearance of the horses, and as horsemen so shall they run. For the appearance of the horses is that of the strength, nobility, and even graceful beauty. Joel 2:5-6. Like the noise of the chariots on the tops of the mountain shall they leap, like the noise of a flame of the fire that devoureth the stubble, as a strong people sit in the battle array. Before their face the people shall be much pain, all faces shall gather blackness. When the Israelites went out of Egypt, all the nations trembled. So will it be with us and the ingathering of the saints. Joel 2:7-8. They shall run like the mighty men, they shall climb the wall like the men of war, and they shall march every one on his ways, and they shall not break the ranks. Neither shall one thrust another. They shall walk every one in his path, and when they fall upon the sword, they shall not be wounded. For this army will act in the perfect unity, and each will tend well to his own given part of the work. Moreover, none will suffer harm. Joel 2:9. They shall run to and fro in the city. They shall run upon the wall. They shall climb up upon the houses. They shall enter in at the windows like a thief in the time of the image of the beast. Okay, and that's the time that we're entering into next. When harm will threaten Yahweh's army, they will nevertheless fearlessly go out to carry the gospel, or better understanding of the gospel, meaning teaching the faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua, the new and living way, Hebrews 10:19-20. Okay, that's the gospel that we'll be teaching today. Joel 2:10. For the earth shall awake before them, the heavens shall tremble, the sun and the moon shall be dark, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. This suggests that his people will have power of the kind which Joshua and Hezekiah and Elijah had. Joel 2:11. And the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, which is here on earth, that is a leading this army visibly, shall utter his voice before his great army of the army of antipodal David, for his camp is very great, for he is strong that executeth his word, for the day of the Yahshua is great and very terrible, and who can abide it? We must be righteous if we would abide it. Joel 2:12. Therefore also now, saith Yahshua, turn you even unto me with all your heart, and with fasting, and with weeping, and with mourning. For this reason, we should now turn unto the Yahweh. Let's do that again. For this reason, we shall now turn back unto the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, with all of our hearts, and with fasting. There it is right there. And I'll come to the place where I realize I'm going to have to do some fasting for victory over my health and problems that I've got in my body, and with weeping and with mourning. This is what Yahweh calls for now from each of us individually. Let's do that last sentence again. For this is what the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, calls for the house of David that he is at the head of for now from each of us individually. Joel 2:13. And rend your heart and not your garment, and turn unto the Yahshua, your Redeemer, your King, or your Savior. For he is gracious and merciful, slow to anger and of the great kindness, and repenteth him of the evil. For Yahshua proved, when he was alive here on earth 2,000 years ago, that he was slow to anger with all them Pharisees and Sadducees and those evil people that ganged up against him. He proved that he was slow to anger. That's why we're just talking about him now. He's come again, and he's going to prove it again a second time that he's slow to anger. But he's full of mercy. For we rend, when we rend our hearts and we will, in other words, be inwardly repentant, and it will be our experience only if we are genuine believers, knowing what we believe and believing what we know. Joel 2:14-18. Who knoweth if he will return and repent and leave a blessing behind him, even a meat offering and a drink offering unto the Yahshua, your Redeemer. Blow the trumpet in the Mount Sinai at the 12th hour. At the 12th hour, sanctify a fast. Okay, so at this special time then, and the prophecy, when it comes to its fulfillment, we are to sanctify a fast, call for a solemn assembly, and gather the people for the sanctifying of the congregation assembly with the elders, gather the children, and those that suck the breast, let the bridegroom go forth of his chamber. Now that word let is a command word. That's the same thing as ordering, ushering a command. It says, and the bride out of her closet, let the priest, the ministers of the Yeshua, that would be your 144,000, weep between the porch and the altar, and let them say, spare thy people, O Yeshua, and give not thine heritage to reproach. First, the 144,000 is the heritage of Yeshua. They're the firstborn, or they're the first fruits harvest. When Yeshua comes back to take charge of the harvesting of the world, he's going to need the harvest of starting with the 144,000 first fruit and going through the Gentile world until it's all harvested. Okay. So it says that the heathen should rule over them. Wherefore should they say among the people, where is their Yahweh? Where is their Yahweh? Then will the Yeshua be jealous for his land and pity his people. So this land that Yeshua the Son has inherited, this purified land, whatever land becomes purified, that's what Yeshua has inherited, because he's leading the purification of when he starts the harvest. Then will the Yeshua be jealous for his land and pity his people. Not the heathen, but the Yeshua, the Son of Yahweh, is to rule over his people of the house of David. Okay, in the time of the Mount Zion, the 12th hour. Because once he raised up Antipatrical David, then Yahshua gives his underservant, Antipatrical David, he gives him the mantle to rule over his people. And it says the covenant that Yahweh made with David way back there, 3,000 years ago. He made it with David that in the Antitype in the last days, that there's going to be a new covenant made with the house of David, aside from that new covenant made with the house of Israel. Okay. Yes, Yahshua will answer and say unto his people in Joel 2:19, behold, I will send you corn and wine and oil, and you shall be satisfied therewith, and I will no more make you a reproach among the heathen. These are the Yahshua's promises unto us. Malachi 4 and Isaiah 2 clearly outline the great blessings that Yahweh the Father has in store for those who choose to serve Him as well. For our further encouragement today, let us turn to Micah 4:1. But in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of the house of the Yahshua, and that's the Mount Zion at the 12th hour, shall be established in the top of the mountain. Okay, so all the other mountains, it means kingdom. So the mountain, so actually when it says mountain, it's talking about the kingdom of the house of the Yahshua. And the kingdom in this case would be the principal kingdom of David. Shall be established in the top of the kingdoms or the mountains of the world. That has a church and state rule. And it shall be exalted above the hills, and people shall flow unto it. For the Yahweh's kingdom, which the Daniel and his second chapter said would be set up in the days of his king, is here referred to as the mountain. Okay. Now you get that? For the Yahweh's kingdom, which Daniel in his second chapter said would be set up in the days of these kings, is here referred to as the mountain. So didn't I tell you earlier that when you read that word mountain, it's talking about a kingdom? Well, here it is, verified. Just read it. Micah 4:2. And many nations shall come and say, come, and let us go up unto the kingdom, or says mountain, or the kingdom of the Yahshua, which is the everlasting kingdom of David. And unto the house of the Yahweh, the father of the Jacob. So this kingdom of David, not at the 12th hour, is where the house of Yahweh, the father of Jacob, is at as well. And he will teach us of his way, and we will walk in his path. For the law shall go forth of Zion, and the word of the Yahshua from Jerusalem. And where is Jerusalem called today? What was it called back then when it was developed into the full name of Jerusalem back then? It was called the Mountain of David. Mount Zion. It was called Mount Zion. The Mount of David. Now when Moses came out of Egypt with the children of Israel, took him 3 months to get by Pentecost to get to Kadesh Barnea, which was Mount Sinai in Saudi Arabia. So they called that, they didn't call that Mount Zion, they called it Mount Sinai of the Old Testament. And they called Jerusalem, which is about several hundred miles north of Mount Sinai in Saudi Arabia, that goes into the land of Israel, they call that the kingly palace crown of the land of the tribe of Judah. Okay, that's the part that Judah possessed of the tribe of Judah when it got into the land. That's the part they possessed, was Jerusalem and the hill countries of Judea. And it's Jerusalem is called a kingly palace crown. That's where David set up his kingdom. To continue our reading, let us now skip a few verses and read very carefully. Micah 5:1-15. Now gather thyself in truth, O daughter of the truth. He hath laid siege against us. They shall smite the judge of Israel with a rod upon the cheek. But thou, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though thou be little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of thee shall he come forth unto me. That is to be the ruler in Israel, whose going forth have been from of old, from everlasting. Therefore will he give them up until the time that she which travaileth hath brought forth. Then the remnant of his brethren shall return unto the children of Israel. All right. okay, there's a lot of set there, and it shall stand, and he shall stand and feed in the strength of the Yahshua. Now this is talking about the antithetical servant of the David. He's going to stand and feed in the strength of the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, in the majesty of the name of the Yahshua, his king. And they shall abide, for now shall he be great unto the ends of the earth, and this man shall be the peace. When the Assyrian shall come into our land, and when he shall tread in our palaces, then shall we raise against him 7 shepherds and 8 principal men, and they shall waste the land of Assyria. This is a Gentile world today, with the sword, and the land of Nimrod, and the entrances thereof. Thou shalt be the, thus shall he deliver us from the Assyrian when he cometh into our land, and when he treadeth within our border. And the remnant of Jacob shall be in the midst of many people, as a dew from the Yahshua, as the showers upon the grass, that tarrieth not for man, nor waiteth for the sons of man. And the remnant of Jacob shall be among the Gentiles, in the midst of many people, as a lion among the beasts of the forest, as a young lion among the flocks of the sheep, who, if he go through, both treadeth down and teareth in pieces, and none can deliver. Thy hand shall be lifted up upon thy adversary, and all thine enemies shall be cut off. And it shall come to pass in that day, saith the Yahshua, that I will cut off thy horses out of the midst of thee, and I will destroy thy chariots, and I will cut off the cities of thy land, and throw down all thy strongholds, and I will cut off witchcraft out of thine hand, and thou shalt have no more sorcerers. Thy graven images also will I cut off, and thy standing images out of the midst of thee, and thou shalt no more worship the work of thine hand, and I will pluck up thy graves out of the midst of thee, so will I destroy thy city. And I will execute vengeance and anger and fury upon the heathen, such as they have not heard. Yahweh has determined that he will cut out all wickedness. And when he does, then his people will then be made great through it. In Isaiah chapter 32 and 34, a further description is given of what the Yahweh has done and will yet do, and then speaking of his righteous people, we read in Isaiah 35:1-2, for the wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice even with the joy and singing. The glory of the Lebanon shall be given unto it. The excellency of the Carmel and Sharon they shall see. The glory of the Yahshua and the excellency of our Yahweh. His land will yet blossom abundantly and bring forth fruit. And there will also be rejoicing, joy, and singing when the Yahshua's glory an action state will be seen. Isaiah 35:5-7. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then shall the lame man leap as an hart, and the tongue of the dumb sing. For in the wilderness shall waters break out, and streams in the desert, and the parched ground shall become a pool, and the thirsty land springs of the water, and the habitation of the dragon, where each slave shall be grass with the reeds and the rush. In the time of the loud cry, signs and wonders and miracles will follow the believer. All this awaits those who are awake unto these facts and who devote their main interest and even their very lives to the furtherance of Yahweh's cause, in his kingdom. For the David applied himself well unto his work, and Yahweh saw it and made him king. For in order to be a good king, a man must attend well to his business. In Yahweh's work, as in everything else, men can succeed only if they take real and sustaining interest in the work he gave them to do. It would be profitable for each of us to examine ourselves closely for the purpose of determining whether we are in every respect seeking first the kingdom of the heaven and his righteousness. If we have a clear vision of what the Yahweh is to do, or what the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, is to do with his kingdom, this everlasting kingdom of David, when he comes back to earth in this 12th parabolic hour, this is his second advent, and he sits upon the throne of his earthly father, King David, and that's in Luke 1:32-33, and that's in the prophecy of Isaiah 9:68. And if we really want to receive the promised blessing, we will in no wise find ourselves guilty of hindering or delaying there which makes possible their fulfillment. Okay. Often the Christian life is beset by the dangers, and duty seems hard to perform, for the imagination pictures impending ruin before and bondage or death behind. Yet the voice of Yahweh speaks clearly, "Go forward." We should obey this command, even though our eyes cannot penetrate the darkness, and we feel the cold waves about our feet. This obstacle that hinder our progress will never disappear before a halting, doubting spirit. Those who defer obedience till every shadow of the uncertainty disappears, and there remains no risk of the future or defeat, will never obey at all. Unbelief whispers, "Let us wait till the obstructions are removed and we can see our way clearly." But faith courageously urges in advance, hoping all things, believing all things. Patriarchs and Prophets, page 290. So continuing on, it says, when does the judgment of the living commence? Under those who wish to know when the living in the Seventh-day Adventist Church will be judged and the books of heaven, we give you the benefit of the Brother Hollis clear cut statement which he wrote and answering specific questions on the subject as to whether this work of the separation or investigation of who has and who has not the wedding garment is now taking place. I may say that it is not, for the reason that we are now in the marking time of the Ezekiel chapter 9, not yet in the time of the investigation of who has the mark and who has it not. For the marking itself is not the separation, not a work of the sanctuary in heaven. It takes place in the Seventh-day Adventist Church on the earth in the 12th parabolic hour that we are in and have been in since the Passover 2002, as well as in the home. Each one for himself decides his own case, either by sign and sign for the abominations in the midst thereof, or by the not so doing. Now, this is what the liberalism from the Texas, Catherine and I, and Alan DeLong, we were delivered because we were signing a crime against all the abominations and the idolatry that was being practiced there in the Kermit. When we finally learned after 32 years, when we finally learned what the practice of idolatry was, we didn't even know for the first 32 years at Kermit what the idolatry was. Brother Johnson stayed away from that subject because his wife was a ringleader of apostasy and pushing idolatry in the church, and he didn't dare fight against her because he established her as his guru to begin with, and so he wasn't going to speak against her. So it took us 32 years, Catherine and I, to learn from another place and another source what constituted the practice of idolatry in the Church of Israel. And we found out that birthday celebration was the first and foremost idolatry going on in the church, or to be left without the mark and be cut down by the angel's sword or weapon. For the only judging which the sanctuary in heaven does in the regard unto these is to give the right for one class of the dead to arise either in the first resurrection or in the second resurrection, and to give the right for one class of the living to stand on the Mount Zion at the 12th hour with the Lamb for the translation, and for the other to die at the slaughter weapons of the angel and to arise in the second resurrection. Thus it is seen that the time of the sanctuary judgment among the living first fruits starts in the time of the slaughter and continues thereafter during the time of the second fruits. In our conversation, I meant to explain that we are not in the sanctuary judgment of the living. We're not in the time for our sins to be blotted out, but in the time for us to decide, judge for ourselves, either to receive the mark and be saved, or to remain without it and be taken by the slaughter weapons of the angels. We are not in the seventh seal. The half hour silence is yet future. I try to explain that we have not advanced far enough in the harvest of the first fruit to have the tares cut down from the ground. where they are reading the church are to have the wheat put into the barn, the mountain or the everlasting kingdom of heaven, Daniel 2:44 and 45, that's the kingdom of David during the 12th hour, that we are in a time when the distinction between the tares and the wheat is becoming more and more apparent, while the stalks of the wheat are being marked so that when the reapers of the tares pass by, they will leave the wheat on its stalks until all the tares are cut out. Well, the tares are not cut out. They are pulled up by the roots. There is no blade that goes on the tares, leaving any roots in the ground. They're pulled up by the roots. But the wheat, you cut it off above the ground so that you can have roots in the ground for the next seed. Then the wheat will be gathered and put into the barn. The kingdom, the everlasting kingdom of heaven. The great harvest, as the harvest of the sacred fruit, is to follow after. And number three, the judgment of the living on earth commences with the Ezekiel 9. But in heaven, in the books after Ezekiel 9, the judgment of the living is in the two phases. The first phase is a separation that takes away the wicked from among the righteous, Ezekiel 9. The second phase is the book work when the investigation takes place, and when the sins of the righteous and the names of the wicked are blotted out of the records in heaven. This second phase, the judicial session in heaven, is what commences after Ezekiel 9. Number 4. It is true that the Shepherd God, Volume 2, 172, reveals that we are entering into the time of the judgment of the living, but it does not say that we have entered into it. This is double talk. He didn't know how to correct that, so he just kind of smoothed over it. Neither does it say that the judgment of the living has already begun. Not that part which we as Seventh-day Adventists call judgment, blotting out sins and sinners from the books of the record, the separation. For the very fact that we are still together, commingled, the good with the bad, itself speaks the truth. Number 5, the reason that you have not been able to ascertain from the publications how we are to know when the judgment will pass from the dead to the living is that you have failed to study the message in its entirety. For the trumpet is even now blowing, but as yet the day has not been announced. We can, however, say that the slaughter of Ezekiel 9 is what marks the judgment passing from the dead to the living. Number 6, regarding the judgment, although the example of the Shepherd God does announce the judgment of the living a number of the times, yet according unto the answer book, number 2, page 38 to 42, we are still in the time of the judgment of the dead, and he's right, because Ethiopia and the Shepherd God in his day was in the 10th parabolic hour. Same thing as the Seventh-day Adventists. They were in the 10th parabolic. They were all Adventists together, except Ethiopia had the latter rain of the truth to give to the Adventists so that they could be harvested, and also harvest the Shepherd God along with it. You will also notice that the reference you mentioned, the Shepherd God, Volume 2, 162, it says, the investigation of the living commences after the fulfillment of Ezekiel 9. Number 7, with regard unto your answers to the questions in the Sabbath school quarter, we want you to know that you got along just fine throughout the entire lesson, with the exception of your passing mentioned that the judgment of the living began in 1929. You will find that the lesson consistently teaches that the judgment of the living has not yet commenced, that we are still living in the time of the judgment of the dead, and that the start of Ezekiel 9 is what marks the judgment passing from the dead to the living. Read the White House Recruiter. Number 8. For the commencement of the judgment of the dead was marked by the lightning and the thunderings and voices. Revelation 4:5. Whereas the commencement of the sanctuary phase of the judgment of the living is marked by the voices and thunderings and lightning and an earthquake. Revelation 8:5. See the Shepherd Rod, volume 2, page 221, and track number 15, page 64. Okay, number 9. And to the time, as to the time of the commencement of the judgment of the living, see the answer book number 1, page 94 and 95, and the Shepherd's Rod, volume 2, page 220, which said, when the seal is open and the judgment of the living begins, we must know it. The date of that glorious event will be made known at the fulfillment of the Revelation 8:5. This brings the end of our study for this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now.